Blog Talk Radio.
And I'm here with a movie critic, must-see movie film critic on the internet on Facebook, Mr. Larry Demkowski, and our good friend and adversary, the movie maven herself, Miss Karen D. What's up, guys? How y'all doing?
Doing good. How about you?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. Had a good day today. I have a good day every day, but today was better somehow. I don't know. I'm just glad to be alive. So what's going on with you, Larry?
Finishing up a week of what is it called? Oh yeah, spring break with the kid, and it's been a fantastic week. Excuse me. And now we have a wonderful show to talk about tonight.
Yes, indeed. No, I was sitting back thinking, trying to figure out, you know, what would be a good theme and something that we really hadn't really talked about that much. And I thought, you know, there's a lot of comedians out there, and unfortunately won't be able to talk about all of them, but there's a lot of comedians out there that are making that transition over to dramatic film. Stand-up comedians, sitcom comedians who are delving into the other side, not the dark side, but just the other side of film, and getting dramatic roles, instead of comedic roles. And so I thought, well, that might be a great thing. So let's go ahead and get things started. Why don't you go first, Larry, and tell us who your comedian is and the film and why you liked it.
Well, my guy is, can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Yeah.
Good. My guy is the great one himself, Jackie Gleason. Now, Jackie Gleason started out as a performer who would do anything, and led music bands, wrote music, even though he couldn't read or write music. He worked at restaurants. He worked at nightclubs on the East Coast. He made films on the West Coast, and he flew back and forth between the two. And then eventually had his own television shows and became the stuff that legends are made of. The films that I'd like to talk about primarily. There's one film in particular, 1961 film called The Hustler. It stars Jackie Gleason, Paul Newman, and George C. Scott. If you haven't seen this movie, this is mandatory. This is a mandatory film if you are a film buff, even if you're not a film buff, to sit down and watch this film. This film in 1961 is considered one of the first films that has the protagonist must lose to win. So for the protagonist to really win, to really to grab that brass ring, he's got to give up. He's got to surrender. And in this film, the primary character, played by Paul Newman, has to give up. Well, his goal in life is to be the greatest pool player ever. And that is played brilliantly by Jackie Gleason, who plays Minnesota Fats. Now, let me tell you a little interesting thing here. Minnesota Fats was the name in the film. Minnesota Fats wasn't known as Minnesota Fats until after this film was made. He actually went by New York Fats or Chicago Fats until this film was made, and then he changed his playing persona to Minnesota Fats because of the popularity of this film.
So you're actually saying that this is really kind of a biopic for this particular character?
Yeah. Let me tell you, Jackie Gleason, he had a photographic memory. And not only did he have a photographic memory with sight, but also with sound. And so whenever he heard something, he could repeat it back. Years later, he could repeat it back. If he saw something, he'd remember exactly what it was and how it went. And so he never rehearsed. He hated rehearsing. He would read the script. He would show up. He'd do his job and leave. And if there were any stage directions, the director would put a stand-in in the spot. Jackie Gleason would watch what the stand-in was supposed to do, and then it was time to shoot, he'd get up and he'd do it. An incredible actor, an incredible man. This film, he's so convincing as this pool player. You don't see the great one, Jackie Gleason. You see this very professional pool player who lives to shoot pool and lives to win at pool. Mm-hmm. I'm going to flash to another film that was made around the same time, a year later, Gigot. Gigot was directed by Gene Kelly, and it was shot in Paris, and it's about this mute played by Jackie Gleason, a mute I'm stammering again, so please forgive me. A mute custodian, a janitor, and nobody liked him. Everybody hated him. He lived in a basement, in a dusty basement. And in this role, he just pantomimes his entire character, and everyone else is talking and doing things, but he has to interact with people without being able to utter a sound. And he's absolutely brilliant at it. He's captivating, and he just pulls you into the screen with him. In this film, he plays this janitor who helps out a poor woman and her daughter who are destitute. And they have less than he has, and he has nothing. But whatever he has, he willingly gives it to them so that they can live. During this process, he develops a wonderful relationship with the little girl, and the little girl opens up, and he becomes just this father figure to her. An interesting quirk with the character. He loves to follow funeral processions. He may not know at all the person who's died, but if he sees a funeral procession, he gets in line and follows it to the graveyard. And once he gets to the graveyard, he cries, he weeps with everyone else, as though he really knew that person.
Okay, that's just creepy.
Well, here you go. You ready for this? You ready for this? Throughout the film, they're all chasing him. And then he falls into the river, and everyone thinks he's dead. A day or two later, they're holding a funeral procession, and he sees it. It turns out it's a funeral.
Good Lord.
It's even though it's comedic, it really isn't. It uses comedy, but it's really a drama. The final film I want to mention is one that we talked about just the other day, and I don't want to spend too long on it, is Requiem for a Heavyweight, 1962. He plays alongside Anthony Quinn and a couple of other marvelous actors. And he plays the if you remember what we talked about a few weeks ago, he plays the manager for the boxer, and does such a great job. You really again see someone who's torn between how much he likes this kid, this guy, this boxer, and yet how much he values his own life, and yet at the same time he's willing to bet away everything and ruin everyone's life. He's really caught in between living it and barely existing. And the interesting thing is all of these characters that Jackie Gleason does, they're all caught in between just living, you know, just existing and living. And he does a brilliant job inside there. One final note, in a film he made with Laurence Olivier, when Laurence Olivier was asked by the British press how it was like working with this Jackie Gleason, the only thing that Laurence Olivier said, he was truly the great one.
Wow. Real good, Larry. Really good. I'm a big fan of Jackie Gleason as well, and I do like The Hustler. But it's great to hear about those other films. I appreciate that. Okay, Karen, why don't you name who your comedian is and tell us about your film or films?
Well, I decided to pick Monique because of her performance, her dramatic performance in the movie Precious, the novel by Sapphire, the novel Push by Sapphire. And to me, this shows why comedians are tapped so often to play really complex and often dark characters. I mean, a lot of times comedians will joke about how depressed they are, how angry they are, because comedy stems, a lot of comedy stems from rage, a lot of comedy stems from pathos, from sadness. There's not a lot of comedy that stems from people being really happy about their lives. They're usually, it usually germinates from a complaint or a sense of injustice about the way the world works. And it's that sort of viewpoint that needs to be captured for some of these really complex characters. And Monique does this so well in the movie Precious. This movie came out, and I think it was, I want to say it was 2010, and it was quite a good movie, and so many firsts for that movie. There was a virtually unknown, or not virtually unknown, she was unknown actress. I mean, it was like our first major audition. Gabourey Sidibe played Precious and won the Academy Award for, she was nominated for the Academy Award for Best Performance by an Actress. That's virtually unheard of for a first-time motion picture performance. Monique did win the Academy Award in 2010 for Best Supporting Actress, and the person who adapted the screenplay also won an Academy Award, and this is also the first film nominated for Best Picture, which was directed by an African-American. Lee Daniels was a part of this movie. I think he was the director. So this movie received a lot of accolades, and deservedly so. It's about this teenager who is physically abused, sexually abused, emotionally abused, and she's pregnant for the second time. And she's trying to find her way in the world with a mother, played by Monique, who constantly tells her how useless she is, how fat she is, how stupid she is, and somehow Precious finds a way to stake a claim for the value of her life in the world. That's the point of the story. And she runs across people, a social worker, a teacher, who help her to realize that her life really does have meaning. Her first child has Down syndrome, and so that's a horrific situation, and then she gets pregnant again while she's going through a GED program. In the meantime, her mother, played by Monique, is on welfare and is mad at Precious because she's not on welfare too. Monique's character is scamming the system, so she's constantly afraid of being found out. And you really want to hate this woman because she really is hateful. She's horrible, and it's just you can really just blanch at what she does. So, I mean, she throws things at her. She knocks her down the stairs. She takes the first baby that Precious has. She takes it away from her and throws that baby down and doesn't want to feed her, makes her cook. And then on top of that, she requires Precious to sexually stimulate her. So, you know, so there's like just abuse all the way around. And yet at a critical point of the movie, when Monique's character is being confronted with all the horrible things she does, Monique is such a good actress that she turns that around and she somehow compels you to actually feel sorry for her, because she talks about how she was sexually abused and how she was afraid of what would happen if Precious left her life and actually staked out her own life and what would happen to her. And it's like, this is horrible. This woman is a monster, and yet you find yourself actually feeling sorry for her. It takes an amazing actor to do that. And I think Monique's skills as a comedian really help her dig into this character. Also, the other thing is that Monique did publicize right around the time of this movie that she herself was a victim of sexual abuse. And so she understands the psychology of the abuser and the abused. So often people who are victims of sexual abuse go on to abuse other people. So she understands the mindset that drives a person to do that. And she gives an amazingly compelling performance. And I totally, if you watch this movie, you will totally understand why she won Best Supporting Actress in 2010, Best Supporting Actress for a Performance in a Motion Picture. She totally owned that movie. She rocked it. So that's why I picked Monique.
Wow. And, you know, I remember, like you said, Monique making that statement and coming out in the public with her own abuse, and I agree with you. I think that definitely propelled her into giving a wonderful performance. I watched that movie, and I felt so sorry for her child, but at the same time, I too was empathetic with the fact that she had gone through so much herself, and it was a pretty pretty interesting film. I enjoyed it as well.
And well, one other thing I just want to mention, too, is that given the body of Monique's work, I mean, as an actress, she's known for about 30 things, just about all of them comedic, and a lot of television work. And those sort of light roles that she plays in no way gives you a clue that she has the capacity to play a role like the mother of Precious in the movie Precious. It really socks you right between the eyes and almost comes from out of nowhere. But she totally does it.
Yeah, indeed. Any words on that, Larry?
This is a powerful role. She does such a fantastic job. I disagree with a couple of things that you said, but that's personal choice. I think that she did a fantastic job with this role, and I highly recommend people watch this film.
Wait a minute. What do you disagree with?
I think that how it was written and how she how the character started talking about her own life was a manipulation to try to keep her daughter to stay, because without that she has no anchor. So she's doing anything she can to manipulate her daughter from her daughter becoming her own person. It's a very common thing that happens in abusive families where the abuser, when they, it looks like they're about to lose everything, suddenly they ride the pity pot and they want the other person to stay because, gosh, and I was that way too, and I'm sorry, and this happened, and this happened in my life. But that to say, she pulls it off, and she pulls it off really well. You know, it's hard playing a role like that, and it's demanding, and it takes a lot out physically and emotionally, a lot out of the actor to do that. And I got to give her credit; she really nailed it, like you said.
Well, let me shift the focus to the comedian that I decided to pick, and that would be Jamie Foxx. Basically, my first encounter with him was on Keenan Ivory Wayans' hit variety show In Living Color. Then there was some television stand-up that he had done, and he had even had his own sitcom for a while, and he also had, you know, played some comedic roles in a number of films. But since 2004, there seemed to have been a surge toward dramatic roles for Jamie Foxx. And, of course, he wowed us in a lot of these films, like Collateral, Law Abiding Citizen, and, of course, the most recent film, Django Unchained, which brings me to what I feel is the role of a lifetime for him when he portrayed Ray Charles in Ray. When you see Jamie Foxx in this film, you see Ray Charles. I mean, it's uncanny. The look, the mannerisms, the voice, even the piano playing, which Foxx, in my opinion, was blessed to be able to rehearse with the real Ray Charles himself. The performance was just spot on as far as I'm concerned. As a result, he too got an Oscar, a gold Oscar. And as far as I'm concerned, again, you know, he deserved it. It was perfect. Now, of course, this is a great film about a great legendary artist performed by a stellar cast. I mean, we've got Regina King, we've got Kerry Washington, for example. But to me, Jamie Foxx, his role in this film, he just embodied Ray Charles. And as far as I'm concerned, as far as dramatic films are concerned, I think Jamie Foxx is just going to be ascending into better and better and better roles. I mean, here's a guy who is a dramatic actor / comedian now, instead of comedian / dramatic actor. I watched this film, and I see side-by-side pictures. If you look at any of the press that's gone out, any of the media that's out there, especially in social media, you see pictures, and it's amazing. And then if you look at the pictures that I put on the for this particular episode, you'll see some side-by-sides with Ray Charles and with Jamie Foxx, and even one where they're actually sitting together, and Jamie Foxx looks like the young version of Ray Charles. It was an amazing performance to me. And if you haven't seen this movie, this is a must-see. This is a great film, and I think Jamie Foxx nailed it.
I agree too. Jamie Foxx is just so talented too, because he's a musician and he sings. He also really does play the piano, so that definitely helped in terms of him rehearsing the musical sequences. He just brought so much to help do the character.
Yeah, I remember him younger in his comedic stand-up every once in a while emulating Ray Charles, and I thought, oh my God, that was just like Ray Charles. And then, of course, being honored and having the ability to not only do the film but actually meet Ray Charles and really pick Ray Charles's brain about the things that he has to try to figure out to actually play this person, and at this point in time, a living legend. And that in itself had to be, I think, ominous in one respect, but blessing in another. I think this was just a really good opportunity, and I think it was a great film, and I think he did a stellar job.
I thought so too.
Let me just say one thing. I think with all three that we've talked about, they have said something unique about them, and their ability to what makes comedy work, and to be able to take that and turn it around and give it a voice in drama. And that is only a comedian can do that. A dramatic actor can rarely go and do comedy. But we see comedians take what's inside of them, turn it around, and give it to you in a different manner. And it's brilliant. And we need to see more movies like that. We need to see more comedians coming out and showing what they can really do. If they have a good director and a good script, and if they're allowed to do what they're good at doing, it can really work. Not all comedians, but every once in a while you get one who can really deliver the goods.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the aspects is that comedians have always been really good storytellers. And if you're a really good storyteller, the emphasis and the things that are required of you to play those dramatic roles seem to be a little bit more natural because you're so used to telling a story. This is just telling a story on a broader scale. And with that, you alluded to with the directors and the screenplays and all those efforts pulled together, it just makes a good storyteller even better at times. And I think that's another reason why we enjoy these films so much. Now, my cousin Sharon made a good point to me. She wrote me a little blurb about different people that we didn't mention, like Robin Williams. If you look at our event page on Facebook, you see a lot of other really good comedians who have gone and done some dramatic roles. And I'm just going to mention a few of them. Lily Tomlin, for example, is one. Steve Carell, most recently, and he was nominated. Another quick thing I want to say about the people that we actually chose. We had three nominated for Oscars and two winners of the three people that we focused on today. Getting back to other comedians who have made that transition, Steve Martin has made that transition. I think Eddie Murphy, especially relatively recently in Dreamgirls, I thought he did an excellent job, and he too was nominated.
He was my second. He would have been my second choice if I hadn't picked Monique.
Yeah, he did an excellent job in that film. And, I mean, there's just so many others. Even the comedic team, I mentioned Keenan Ivory Wayans earlier, his younger brother, Marlon Wayans, has gone into the dramatic side of things. And some really good performances from someone who seemed not just funny but wacky, and yet very subdued in some of the films that he was able to participate in. And so it's a myriad of people out there. You just have to find them. But I was glad we were able to focus on these three films and these three actors. Well, we've got about a minute left, ladies and gentlemen. Anything you guys want to throw in there that might help our listeners?
Go ahead, Larry.
Oh, please, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, Robin Williams is somebody. I have to say that for me, I was never a fan of Robin Williams' comedy. It's just too manic for me. I never liked Mork and Mindy. I never liked his style of comedy at all. But I really actually preferred him in dramatic roles, and I thought he was so good. What movie am I thinking of? It's not Patch Adams. It's there's another movie where
Good Will
he.
Hunting?
Hmm.
Good Will Hunting?
I'm sorry.
Good Will Hunting.
Oh yeah, that one. Yeah, he was so good in that. That's the one.
And with me, his portrayal of the homeless guy. I just had it in my brain here.
It was about some city, right?
Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, I'm totally lost here. Does anybody know where the coffee is? Here it is.
Well,
the Fisher
we're
King.
Out of time
the Fisher King.
Right, the Fisher King. Well, we've only got a few seconds, but thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to us. Come back to A Real Point of View here on Blog Talk Radio. If you have any comments, send them to A Real Movie Guy at A Real Movie Guy on Twitter and also on Facebook, Real Point of View on Facebook. Thanks again for listening, and make sure you get out to the movies and definitely try to see these three films. Have a good night, everybody.